Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Thank you so much for being with us. We do appreciate it, as always. It seems like we're picking up right where we left off on Friday. Text line will be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Just let me know what's on your mind. That's the way to interact with the program. Jennifer Fiddler going to join us here in about 30 minutes by phone today. I think she's on the road, so we'll hear from her. Dell Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. He'll stir the pot somehow, I'm sure. And then finally, House Majority Leader Scott Stadhagen. We'll get his thoughts on this upcoming election cycle. The kind of state of play right now in Alabama, always good to hear from him. That's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. So, it's presidential politics. The hurricane news is still kind of lingering. I think, people are still underwhelmed by the hurricane response, but that is not as an overwhelming story that was this time a week ago. I'll start with this. There's problems for Kamala Harris, and I don't care if our five liberal listeners agree or disagree with that. But it's just a matter of fact right now. I'll say, first off, I think the polling shows a dead heat. That's sort of the takeaway here. But the polling, as we know, there's a margin of error there that favors Trump. That Trump, for whatever reason, and I think it's methodology, but it may also be Trump voters don't respond to mainstream media pollsters. And, 9, 10 points and 16 was the margin of error. They just didn't see it coming. In 20, it was probably closer to 7 or 8. Some places, maybe just, somewhere between 5 and 8 points. So, I think for Harris to win, the polling has to show her up with 5. Here it is, it's October 14th. We're less than 3 weeks away. What can she do? What can they do? What will Democrats do to make up that kind of ground? I think there's panic on the left. I'll tell you why you see it. It's the leaking. There's these stories, reports, I guess, of a little turmoil between the Biden team and the Harris team. And that stuff is leaking out to the media, to Axios and other places. And that's the first sign of a sinking ship. I'm surprised they kept it together this long, to be honest. Because there was some kind of turmoil between the federal side, the vice president's staff, her federal staff, and her campaign. One more time, guys. Presidential campaigns aren't born overnight, typically. And I think this is a really, really important point. I think this is what you're seeing right now. That presidential campaigns, usually maybe 2 to 3 years in the making for a winning campaign. And this was just kind of thrown together in a matter of moments. Because let's go back to, the last 100 years or whatever. Let's just say the last 50 years. And it starts with like Iowa and New Hampshire, right? And the campaigns form their teams. They have their people. They go either the Iowa path or the New Hampshire path. And typically the last few presidents have been born out of the New Hampshire path. That's the lane you get in. You choose one or the other. And you just kind of camp out there. You hit every spot. You spend a bunch of money. You run a lot of ads. And you go through campaign staffs. You go through staffers. Who's here for the long haul? Who's going to be here from point A to point B? Be it either the from the very beginning to whatever the candidate drops out or to whatever the candidate's actually sworn in. Well, that's how long these campaigns will last, right? And it takes time to get the right people in place. It's a trial and error sometimes. You don't really know right away. Harris never had that opportunity, whatever you want to call it. Now, she inherited some of Biden's staff, some of his campaign staff, but they didn't. It was a totally different approach to presidential politics for her and Biden, whoever it is, was going to be in the very, very end, who was going to win. Now, you have internal turmoil that you can't say, hey, this staffer is not really down with this program, but we can't fire this person because it's too late in the game to hire somebody new. So we just have this kind of squeaky wheel that we can't address. This is what you see. This is what you're watching right now. And it's everything from like where they're going to do interviews and who they're talking to and what states they're going to focus on. And everybody's got an opinion. It's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And this like flash, hurry up offense campaign was a long shot all the way through. And then the other part of this, Trump's doing what he's supposed to do. Every time J.D. Vance goes and does a media interview, he like looks really well, looks really good. Martha Raddatz yesterday on ABC's This Week, just like trying to downplay like Venezuelan gangs taking over apartment complexes. It just seemed a little elitist. She's not running for president, but it was meant to be a gotcha trap moment, and she failed miserably, and he looks like a hero. So things are going pretty decent right now for the Republican side. And as I said earlier, I think Harris has got to win she's got to be in position to win. She's got to have a lead by at least 5 points. They're in trouble. Watch for the panic button, man. They got to do something different. What will it be? What do you think it could be? I've said this all along. You're getting beat by a guy who was impeached twice. He's been convicted of a 34-count felony. He's got all of this negative publicity. The media are so one-sided right now, and you still look, it should be a blowout on paper. If he had said 5 years ago or whatever, these were the set of circumstances. This was everything we know about right now, this moment in history. Now guess the poll numbers. And it would have to be a blowout, and the Democrats aren't getting anywhere with it. It's a political party held together by duct tape. You can't have these disparities where you have like a grassroots that's very woke, very socialist or Marxist even, and the top is corporate, it's Wall Street, it's Silicon Valley, it's all these elite institutions. You can't have, I mean, that's just, those are two very disparate organisms. They're very different. Everything else in the middle is Republican. So you see the problem there. Democrats win when they are the little guy, when they're for the working poor, not the entitlement, but the working poor. We don't have that in America. When they are way more for the little guy, They're not that anymore. It's weird social issues. It works in a, maybe it works in a midterm setting. You know, one issue voters, abortion, it clearly worked in 2022. And Republicans didn't have a response for it. Republicans are not they're trying too hard to adapt to the culture by not doing anything, I guess. So anyway, it works in a midterm, but I don't think people are as myopically focused. I don't think they're as narrowly focused in a general election. It's a more broad wholesale political event than the midterm. Midterm's still pretty wholesale, but just look at turnout. I mean, the turnout models are completely different. Percentage wise, there's always so much hype around a presidential election. How many people can even name who their congressman is? That tells you all you need to know. So state of race right now, it's going good for Republicans. There may be a seismic event that could shake that up, but as far as what the Democrats can do to spark that, I don't know what. I also think this, and we'll get more into this as the week progresses, I think the public just tapped out. The hysteria about, you know, Trump's the next Hitler or fascist or whatever, it doesn't work anymore. And I'll tell you what brought me to this conclusion. Watching SNL this time around in this election cycle, it's not as vicious. They're not even trying as hard. They're still trying to be pro-Democrat, pro-Kamala Harris, anti-Trump. There's no question about that. But it's not as emotionally involved as it was in 16 and even 20. If you remember after Trump was elected, January 17, one of the cast members played the piano and it was like a real somber occasion and they're just not into it this time. I think the bank account for hysteria is drained. I think it's sitting there with a negative balance. People may not vote and they'll vote however they want to vote, but if their candidate doesn't win, they're not going to freak out like they, and so the left exhausted that account and they continue to do so. Every election can't be the most important election in our lifetimes without people just tapping out. All right, you say this every time. You say Trump's going to be Hitler. You say the Republican, whoever that is. I mean, Bush was Hitler. McCain was Hitler. Romney was Hitler. Trump was Hitler. Everybody can't be Hitler, okay? And it just feels that way. I mean, here it is. It's 2 weeks out, and it doesn't seem to be as hyped. And I'll tell you one more telling sign here, and I was looking at this. Cable news ratings are down. Fox News is off by almost 1 million viewers a night. Now, part of that's the departure of Tucker Carlson and the shakeup in the lineup. MSNBC's down. CNN's down. People are not tuning into this presidential election like they had in 2020 even. And now there was COVID. Maybe you were trapped inside. You had nothing better to do than watch Anderson Cooper. I don't know. But just there's tangible proof here to show cable news ratings are sliding in this election cycle. People just aren't. They're just not as emotionally engaged as they have been in the past. And I think Democrats need that emotional component to win. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Curtis Slow was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. 24 minutes after the hour. Coming up in the next segment, State Representative Jennifer Fiddler will be with us. Some text here. Accident. Daphne, I-10 westbound. Camper flipped over. Traffic said there's no traffic. There you have it. Maybe that's, I don't know. That was about 20 minutes ago. David, I just found out from a friend who's a constable that the elected position left off of next month's ballot and tried to get reelected. You need to do a write-in. Anybody know who's, why are they trying to eliminate constables? David, I don't know the answer to that question, but yes, they are. Let's see, what else you got here? Paul, what are your thoughts on Pennsylvania polling? Kamala looked to get a recent bump per Nuts/Sienna. Pennsylvania's always going to be tough. I just, what makes me nervous about Pennsylvania more so than like a Michigan or Wisconsin is there's you got two major U.S. cities you got to deal with. With Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, particularly Philadelphia. I don't know what kind of shenanigans. You know, like in Wisconsin, you got to deal with Milwaukee, and the Michigan, you got to deal with Detroit. I don't know about Pennsylvania. I'm not sure. But when they say it's like there's Pittsburgh and there's Philadelphia and everything in between is Alabama, so whatever. It's a harder state. Fire Dog, they can cheat like 2020 stuff, but those ballot boxes again. Also, Trump wins. I'm convinced, along with you, one of your callers, that he will never take office. The assassination tips, as well as the recent arrest at the California rally, more than a bit Republicans win the House and the Senate. It may end up being open season on any Republican to let the deep state have to frighten the right out of running for office. I just kind of pumped the brakes on that a little bit. Deep state's very powerful. People in government are powerful. But I think we exaggerate sometimes their ability to do things. Yeah, can the government prosecute an individual and ruin him? Yes. Swing an entire election? It has to be really, really close. I don't think this is going to be close enough. At least not yet. Unnamed texter, Jeff, I think Democrats have just accepted the fact that Trump will win this election and they have just given up. Sometimes I think that. I think some of these down-ballot candidates, though, I would say, unnamed texter, that they are trying to, there may be a little bit of damage control here. This is what you want to watch is when the Senate, especially like Montana, watch these Senate candidates down ballot and see if you see them try to separate themselves from the top of the ticket. And that's a good sign. Josh, when the Lexus News tells you the facts are Haitians are eating cats and dogs, illegal immigrants are not taking their apartment complexes with guns, you can be sure that Haitians are eating cats and dogs, and illegal immigrants are taking over apartment complexes with guns. Well, it was caught on video, and they're quibbling with just how widespread the problem is. That's... They're making a mistake there. There's actual, tangible evidence this is occurring. And you think apartment complex. In Alabama, you think of an apartment complex as a couple of buildings and, two-story. In Aurora, Colorado, these are high-rise apartments. Michael, could the cable news numbers slide because their viewers are simply dying off? I don't know anyone under 50 that gets their news from them, and their average viewer has to be at least 65. I don't think that's necessarily true. Yeah, it's an older audience, but I still think it's I think mostly, I don't think it's the drop off is that profound during a presidential election cycle. They typically see an increase, and the increase just hasn't been as much this time around. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Time enough for counting. When the dealing's done, every gambler knows that the secret. It's midnight. to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. We'll be in touch with the program. Still got a bunch of texts to get to. We'll get to those in due course. Just a little long-winded this morning, but I guess that's a good thing for a radio host. Still to come on a program, Dale Jackson, WVNN, about an hour from now. And Scott Stadig, our House Majority Leader, in that 11 o'clock hour. So you want to stick around for that. But joining us on the line this morning, she's on the road. So we're always appreciative of her time. State Representative Jennifer Fidler making her every other week appearance. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
I am. I'm living a dream, if you want to believe that. So all is well here. Let's get into it here. We ran into each other, Eastern Shore Republican Women, and on Thursday, I guess right now people seem, and I don't know if this has been your experience, but this is what it looks like to me. I guess people are kind of focused on election integrity. We're 3 weeks out. We're in that month window of the presidential election. We had Wes Allen, I guess, at that event, actually. So that kind of bolsters that a little bit. But you hearing that out there?
Yes. Everybody is wanting, you know, to get make sure we have a great turnout for the election. And it's exciting to make sure everybody gets out, gets their buddies out to vote. Make sure we have a strong turnout because it is going to be, you know, it's going to be a tight race, if, you know, I know in Congressional District 2 for sure. So, yeah, Secretary of State Wes Allen spoke at Eastern Shore Republican Women, did a great job, talked about, you know, the things that he's been able to get past with doing away with ERIC and the ballot harvesting bill that was passed this past session and what that meant for the state. So, yeah, it was informative, and I encourage folks to make sure they, because the deadline's coming up, I think it could be October 21st, to make sure you're registered to vote and make sure that's happened, especially, you know, I think I would love to the Republicans to get out and make sure they have a very strong, effort to get out there and vote.
The other thing I know you were, you know, kind of looking into the Haitian resettlement stuff. Now it hasn't showed up in Baldwin County yet, as many or as at least one person has predicted. But any news on that?
Yeah, we're still researching. I mean, we did. There has been. You know, I'm still looking into it, and to kind of give everybody a refresher, I think we've got two different issues here. One, we've got the border, the influx of different nationalities, especially Hispanic, coming in from the border that we're seeing, and that's a burden, and that's a lot. That's stretching our resources for especially our local school systems. And then we've got the separate HCNV program, Haitian, Cuban, Nicaraguan, Venezuelan program, which was the program that was first set up several years ago for the Ukrainian to try to help the Ukraine issue, and it was expanded. And the problem that we're seeing is that there's no federal point person that we can say, hey, are you keeping up with the sponsorship? Because you can go on the federal website right now, HCNV, and look up and see what that program is and how people get involved and how you can sponsor. And these organizations are sponsoring, but the sponsor is not staying connected to the immigrant. And if we had somebody that could make sure that was happening, I think this would be much more clear what's going on. But we've had several different reports, interviews with Haitians themselves, with the Haitian ministers, and I've actually spoke to a Haitian minister myself that say the Haitians are coming in, they don't know who that sponsorship is or that sponsor is. They're getting lost in the system and then shuffled around and more or less kind of getting taken advantage of a little bit because they're here and then without any support resources. And, they're sleeping in an apartment. Everybody pays $100, sleep on the floor, and you pay X amount to transfer yourself to a job that may or may not be happening that day. It's a disservice for the people coming in. It's a disservice for the community that these folks are coming into, because the community leaders will not know. They just, the folks just come in, and the, you know, the immigrant comes in and they get settled in, and the community don't know that they're going to be coming. And I think that rumor, whenever we looked into it, which we couldn't find any evidence that they were actually coming to Baldwin County, especially that many. And I think that's what got everybody, you know, when you hear 1,000 people are going to come to Baldwin County, you're just like, what? So, yeah, we, after looking into it, no, we don't know of anybody coming into Baldwin County. But then on the other side, we're not going to know. You're going to see them one day show up. And they're in our industry, they fill an industry need. So if you're looking at it from the industrial standpoint, the industry and businesses are saying, we need some folks that will work for a lower wage, because there's a lot of manual labor that we need to do. And this, do not confuse it with our farm programs that are successful. Short seasonal workers come over, H2N, I think, program is what the acronym is. But those programs, there are those federal programs that are working successfully. This HCNV is a two-year program, and they just announced recently that they're not going to extend those work visas. So I'm not sure what that means for those folks that are over here working, the immigrant that's here working, and how, you know, what's going to happen to those folks. There's just not really an answer, a clear answer that we've seen and through my research that I have found.
Well, I think our problems, it's all around this, Representative, and this is, I think, especially true for Baldwin County. We have it's either a labor participation problem or a workforce problem. There's just, there is a demand for employees and just not enough of them. And in some ways, in some of these places around the state, including Baldwin County, I would think that's the magnet that entices, you know, these refugees to be resettled here, or any, as you well know, especially like in around Summerdale and places like that, just migrant settlement. And if you think that's really the issue, then not you, but the general you, then the you solve this problem by working on those workforce issues.
There, we do have a workforce participation rate, you know, problem or issue, or I don't know, but it's 56%, I think, was the last percentage. And there has been a push on the state level to try to get more people in the workforce. I mean, that's why the tax credits for the daycare, you know, that's where that came out of. You know, we've got the overtime income tax reduction, trying to get folks to keep on working, because there is that workforce participation rate issue. And yes, I've seen that be the magnet, because when I'm asking superintendents in these more rural areas, are you seeing an influx of this migrants? And they're telling me, no, not really. You know, it's not an issue at all. It's really, and those were more in those rural areas where there may not be the jobs in some of those rural areas. In the HCNV folks, the participants there, we're seeing them go to the poultry plants and the, you know, those areas. But yes, that does seem to be the magnet, because in the, like the rural areas of Baldwin County, like Summerdale, Silver Hill, you know, those feeder patterns for the kids and the students, that's where their parents are more or less kind of getting situated, which that's a little bit lower, better cost to live out there instead of Fairhope, Daphne, you know, along the Eastern Shore and Point Clear. So yeah, that is the thing to be the magnet, the jobs. You know, and historically look back at it, that's where our forefathers came in. I mean, you're moving to where the jobs are, and they're fulfilling that need.
Well, and I guess that becomes, you know, until we could figure that problem out, then we're stuck where we are. And the other side of it, obviously, who's president? The Biden administration, our the future Harris administration, our future Trump administration. But the CHNV program is not being extended. I suppose it's this, right? It's the worst. Wherever these Haitians are that are here already, still got to be resettled somewhere, and they have work visas. Doesn't necessarily mean that Alabama's in the clear, right?
Well, and the way I understood it is the program is, and I might have gotten this wrong, but the program is still ongoing. They're just not extending that status of the work visa portion. So the next several months, the way I understood it is they're still going to be bringing folks in. It's just they're not extending their work visa status any longer. So you still got here people here that's been here, and their work visa status is going to be stopped here in the next couple months because it's been a 2-year program. So it's an issue. Yeah.
Well, while we're on this issue about late, I mean, what do you hear from your farmers? What do you hear? I mean, I know input costs are higher because of just commodity prices, and there's a lot of headwinds there because of inflation, but and supply chain and whatnot, but the labor market and wages and especially when you compete against a government that's paying people to stay home, it seems, or what are you hearing? Has that been an issue with your farmers as far as workforce?
They are, utilizing the H-2A program quite a bit. I can speak to from our family farm, which does not utilize H-2A program, but we have neighbors we just have neighbors that have come out and try to, that are working on the farm. And when the peanuts come in, and that's mostly what they're helping with this time of year. It's just seasonal. We need those additional hands to look at the peanuts. They go through down a board that runs down, and they're picking off the ones that aren't perfect. And they've got several they're looking at it one time. They're like the eyes. Instead of having these electronic eyes on a machine, we actually are employing people to look at those and throw off those peanuts that aren't perfect. But the folks we utilize are locals, we're giving those folks jobs. But most of our bigger farmers, because our family is just really, we're small farmers, but the bigger farmers are mostly utilizing the H-2A program, seasonal, 3 months in or 2 months here. And, they have to have them, They just have to have them.
We're joined by State Representative Jennifer Fidler here on the program. Just a few more minutes, Representative. You and a couple of the other members from the Baldwin County delegation, the airing of the quilts up in Giesman, up in Wilcox County. You got to see that. Tell us about that.
Black Belt Adventures and RC&D hosted a few of the women legislators to go up and see the airing of the quilts, which is just a super cool thing. They have an annual festival now. This was their third year. Great weather Saturday, to see that and see those quilts. But that legacy and just that story is a great part of our heritage in the state of Alabama. And just to see that, and one of the things we were able to do is sit down with some quilters that are actually generational, came down from the people that first started making these quilts, which are internationally known. If you don't know about it, look that up, because they are internationally known. They have been on the runway in New York. They have been picked up by the well-known dressmakers and artists on that end, and they are just getting those quilts out nationwide. But we learned a lot about that story and just pulling those folks up out of poverty in that area through the making of these quilts. So yeah, look that up. It was in that Jeep Ben got to ride over on the electrical ferry again. And go through historic Camden, which is Wilcox County, which is where our governor is from. Just great event. But trying to, the Black Belt Adventures is a group trying to highlight all the, you know, the rural ecotourism and things that we can do across our beautiful middle of our state where we have so much wildlife and bird watching and those things that people love to do that just enjoy in nature. So it was a great trip. It was a great educational opportunity for us and to be able to understand, you know, a little bit about the heritage in that part of the state.
Last question, we'll wrap it up on this, and we'll do more on this as it approaches, but this Title IX event at the Fairhope Baptist Church, and I know your colleague Susan DuBose, General Marshall, Barry Moore are going to participate in it. Tell us what we need to know.
Title IX, Representative DuBose, along with the Attorney General, has been going across the state and educating folks a little bit about what this means for our state and the and how important the us defining what a man is and what a woman is, and because that's the kind of the basis of this. They're having a this seminar, this talk at the Fairhope Baptist Church, October 21st, and the public is invited. It's from 6 to 7. And I just found out they're going to talk a little bit about the undocumented immigrant or migrants, 7 to 8, which is right after the Title IX information. So look for that. We also have Speaker Ledbetter coming to town on that 22nd. So he is speaking at the South Fallen Republican Women's Luncheon, which is Tuesday at noon, and then that night at Point Clear Republican Women's Luncheon at Oak Hollow. So that's, again, on October the 22nd. So look forward to having him here.
Representative, we always appreciate your time. Let's talk again soon.
All righty. Thank you, Jeff, and good morning to all the listeners.
Hey, we appreciate it. State Representative Jennifer Fiddler. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porras Show on FM Talk 106.5.
This really be the end to be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porras Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying around on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? Utilize the text line, if you will. We have a bunch of texts to get to here. I'm going to try to make short. Well, we'll have to do this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 over the next couple of segments. Matt, I think we are engaged with somebody of us now. Don't trust the major news agencies. So many of us are getting news and making up our mind on listening to podcasts. Or it's a strong rumor out there that Trump is going to do be on Rogan. My family and friends network can't wait. So much better than having to listen to the 2-minute sound bites. But here's the deal. Now, cable news outlets, generally speaking, see higher numbers. And we're growing as a population. I know the cord cutters and all of that are like a thing of the new thing. People typically tune in to cable news closer to presidential election cycle, and the increases aren't as steep as they used to be. I just, people are over this. I am telling you, not us in this listening audience, the general public is over the overhyped, most important election of our lifetime news cycle. And they just are over it. They're not, it's not selling. It is, people are, you know, maybe not in big numbers, but on the margins are not as engaged, especially emotionally engaged in this election That's my sense of it. And I tell, like I said, the turning point, what made me think of this was watching the cold open to Saturday Night Live with the Family Feud. And I didn't watch it live. It was kind of vicious, but you can tell, like, even the talent on SNL is not as, they're just not as into the roles they're playing as they were 4 and 8 years ago. It's a different culture right now. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You see, ain't nothing new, 'cause I was country.
From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. Hour number two begins right now. Dale Jackson in about a half hour. I don't know. We'll continue to do that segment for now. Let's see what we got here. Damn Yankee. I told you I'd get through these text messages. 251-343-0106 if you want to add anything to this discussion. But we'll get these out of the way real quick. I think you're onto something, Mr. Poor. The masses are less likely to freak out, but I'm still preparing for the zombie apocalypse the day after the election. I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, there's still going to be some of that. But does it feel like we are in the throes of the heat of the, like, do or die of a presidential election? You can only scream Nazi and fascism, and people are tuning it out. The hysteria is not what it has been in the past. Even like a boring, we'll say this let's go through some the previous election cycles. Obviously we talked about the 2020 and 2016. I mean, Democrats are still talking about 2020 like it's yesterday. Election denier, January 6th. And it was 4 years ago, and this is what you're running on. I don't think people's memories are that long. That's the problem for a lot of Democrats. They got to get something a little more current. This playbook isn't working. I've always said this, and I think the Democratic Party in this election cycle, if they lose, how do they keep it together after this? What do I mean by that? I've always said this. How do you keep what the Democratic Party in 2020 through 2024 has been? It's been all these different 2016 through 2024. All these different little groups. You got the, environmentalists. You got the pro-choicers. You got the LGBTQers. You got the New York Times crossword puzzle guy, wine moms. You got, and just think about all these different segments in society that kind of coalesce around one central idea that Donald Trump is terrible. I mean, that's the glue. It's animosity against Donald Trump. It brings all this together. Then, how does that stay together forever? With or without Trump in the picture? And I think he's just barely hanging on by a thread. I think he's barely hanging on by a thread in 2020. And somebody showed up at Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and all these different doors and said, Joe Biden's going to be our nominee. And you're going to want to go along with it. The Democrats said, we got to beat Trump. And he's the only guy we think that can beat Trump right now. It's not Kamala Harris. It's not you. How do you go from losing Iowa and losing New Hampshire? Listen, historically, there's been two lanes to the presidency. And Biden did not perform well in either one of those. I think what the what opened our eyes to this, it was like how well Bernie Sanders did. And like, acknowledge this. You know, he wins one state. He wins South Carolina. And at that moment in time, everybody else is dropping out like flies. Well, what happened there? You still got a shot at this. And did they run out of money? I don't know. Did the money say, hey, we're not giving to these candidates? We had to beat Trump, and this is who we think is our best bet. It's a very top-down process in the Democratic Party, and it gets back to my point. You have the elites who are used to just kind of ruling everything from the top, and the grassroots, which I think are being manipulated in the Democratic Party. They know how to push buttons. These are not dumb people at the very, very top of the Democratic Party. You know, at some point, that relationship isn't built forever. And right now, it's just barely hanging on. And if it takes an election loss, it's going to reset everything. Because the energy is down, and I always say that, like, the working poor, it's lower. It's always been that way for the Democratic Party. Lower middle class. And it's, you know, how do you play the class warfare card? Are you able to play class warfare and have boys playing girls' sports and all this weird, out of sorts social issue stuff? And I think the Democratic Party is falling apart. You know, it's never been a necessarily all about policy. So it's like I said, let's go through these last election cycles. You look at the Trump years, and it was always Trump. But 16 and moving forward, 2008, 2012, Obama, right? Hope and change. He's the guy. Let's go 2012. And it's just hard to beat Obama. 2008. Go before that, 2004. Was there anything that was magical about a John Kerry candidacy? He was going to run on, like, you know, a throwback to the Vietnam War or something, and that got swift-boated. Just the New England liberal is not really electable as president anymore. 2000. I mean, that could have gone either way. If Al Gore's not the nominee and he wins his own state, it's over. He can't win his own state. What do you have? 96. I mean, it was Bill Clinton. 96 and 92, and Clinton represented sort of a change in the demographic. But anyway, what is the Democratic Party now? What does it kind of coalesce around? And it's just all these different little groups. Is there like a central idea, a central theme? Does the LGBTQ movement think that we should end fossil fuels? I mean, like, ask yourself that. But then you look at the Republican side, and there's a little bit of that. The pro-life crowd, I think, is getting shuffled to the back. I don't like what I'm saying there, but that's what's going on the Republican side. But it's not necessarily a moral equivalence. It's the right seems more unified than the left does. And the left's holding it together from the top down. Jeff, these mostly peaceful apartment takeovers set from an unnamed texter. Fire Dog, never underestimate the power of true believers in anything. The left truly does believe Trump is the version of an antichrist. I have three children, 27, 21, and 18, and I guarantee none of them have ever watched a legacy media news show ever. Unnamed texter. I bet the man caught outside the Trump rally in California did have a four-wheel drive. Well, we need to be careful with this story at Coachella. I don't know what was going on, but I don't know that this is the assassination attempt that's being reported. Unnamed texter. Mike, I've known since November 4, 2020 that I would vote Republican in 2024. Watching Hannity doesn't change anything except waste my time. But I still think that people tune in. They know how they're going to vote, but they're really interested. They want to know where the poll numbers are. They want to know, like, the changes in the race. So it's not the cable news consumption is not about influencing voters of any age range or anything like that. It is an interest in the presidential election cycle. I've been watching Fox News since it came on the air in the 90s. My views have not changed. Why do I watch it? I mean, I'm doing it for a living now, but people watch these shows, MSNBC included. They're interested in the twists and turns in the race. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what Kamala said today. They want to know what Trump said today. There's an engagement there. It's not about necessarily about moving votes. It's just right now at this stage in life, in this stage of our politics, it's about presenting information to your already dedicated audience. The dedicated audiences to this are getting smaller. So, well, everybody listens to the podcast. I mean, is Joe Rogan really going to give you your Brett Baer, like, underground reporting? It's a different kind of news that you get from podcast. The cable news cycle, the cable news presentation, there's just less interest in it. And that's what makes me think people are sort of, they're not as emotionally engaged in this election, despite two assassination attempts, a president, the incumbent president of the United States, stepping aside for the vice president, all of the baggage Trump has, everything going on. This is like a made-for-TV moment, a made-for-House of Cards or West Wing moment. And people are not interested like they have been. You would think it would be the opposite. It's counterintuitive. There's so many turns and twists to this presidential election cycle. And cable news ratings are on the decline. It's tangible. You just feel it out there. The culture's breaking apart. As I said, it's not about trying to woo voters by getting them to watch Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Rachel Maddow, or any of those other people. It's just you already know how you're going to vote. You already know what you think. You already know you're a true believer. You're tuning in to kind of get a little more, does my guy have a shot? I mean, it would be like me saying, well, you're watching College Game Day, and whoever Desmond Howard is going to pick is going to impact who you cheer for on Saturday. It's just not how it works. You already know who you're going to cheer for on college football Saturday, and it's just the game day experience is just for you to know who's playing today or some kind of hardship story about, like, some inner city kid overcoming poverty to become an outside middle linebacker or whatever. It's like that's what that is. And that's what cable news is to politics. You're not picking your side because you're tuned into CNN. Low cable news ratings. I would rather spend 5 minutes reading Victor David Hansen's analysis of events and spend hours listening to Hannity drone on about while endless balance of life ads. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Gene, Trump's been campaigning for 9 years. What will we learn that's going to change the election? Comment, please, on Trump's mental health. Trump's mental health is the new talking point of the left. The same people, Gene, they told us that Biden was fine for the last 10 years, are now trying to tell us that Donald Trump has dementia? That's your new talking point. We'll see. J.D. Vance is weird. Well, that didn't work. Project 2025. Well, that didn't work. Now, Trump has a cognitive decline. Okay. Gene, here's your problem. And I think, like, you're maybe smarter than this, but probably not. You just believe whatever is being fed you. That's it. That's all it is. You're being fed these talking points, and you treat them like just conventional wisdom that everybody ought to know. It's not the case. Be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Believers learn that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers.
My heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow-moving dreams.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Dale Jackson coming up in the next segment. But Gene, I'm going to get back to what you said. I mean, Trump's mental health, you just today, for the first time, brought that up. And it just so happens to be that, the talking heads and the even mentioned on SNL selectively about him and having dementia. It's now the talking point that you probably saw it on Morning Joe or somewhere. Why didn't you talk about Trump's mental health a week ago? And in these terms, Gene, here's what you got to do, Gene. Stop texting into this program with what you've seen on MSNBC, because I watch all this same crap too. I know the talking points. I know the trends in the media. I know when the Harris campaign is trying out something new, and then you think you could bring it on the text line and it will, because I'm going to call you out for it. Like, do better. You want to talk about Trump and Vance and, you know, bring something new. Don't bring something you saw on MSNBC or wherever you got it, because I know you didn't come up with that on your own. Randy, Jeff, Trump is ahead on the end of this day on November 5th. When I some states keep recounting the votes for days and weeks trying to find enough votes to overcome Trump, there may not be enough votes there. I mean, we're talking like 100,000 votes. You guys think that they could just like stuff that many ballots overnight? Think about 100,000 ballots they got to fill out and feed to a machine. And then the part that I think is really important here, that there will be people who are going to keep this quiet. The reason Democrats won in 2020, I believe that the rules were changed. I don't know about, you know, a few thousand ballots in Atlanta or a few thousand ballots in Detroit or wherever, or Phoenix, Arizona, but I know Pennsylvania changed their election rules and didn't go through the right process. That's obvious. And it's in these lawsuits where these other states filed against Pennsylvania. But they don't talk about that. It's they always find the most kooky, true the vote or whatever conspiracy theory, Dinesh D'Souza or what. But you take Pennsylvania off the board, and the mail-in votes and changing the election rules and laws mid election cycle. It's just like moving the goalpost during the game. And that's what I think a lot of Republicans were saying. Hey, how did they get away with this? Dirt Digger, the Democrats let all of our high-paid jobs go overseas. No, they're bringing in cheap labor to take our jobs, propping them up with government assistance with our taxpayer money and taking our jobs. And that's what they do, right? It is... That's the problem with the labor, with the labor market right now. Alabama especially has a low labor participation rate. It's in the mid 50%, which is low, relatively speaking, for the country, but it's kind of in line with the South. A low cost of living, a low standard of living in some cases, and people are just willing to stay home, do bong rips and whatever it is that they do during the day instead of go to work for a low, low, low wage. you know, some of these low-skilled jobs that a lot of people who are government assistants could go take are, they don't pay a lot because we're importing the cheap labor, the migrant labor, the people who would not apply for government assistance. And it's depressing the wages. That's what's going on here. That's what needs to be articulated. And I don't know how you make sense of that, or maybe people make sense of that. But anyway, we could try. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. We do appreciate it. Text line 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program, House Majority Leader Scott Stadagan slated to be with us. So please stay tuned for that. But joining us now, up from that way, we do this every Monday from Yellowhammer News and WVNN and also Talk 99.5. Del Jackson is with us. Del? Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I could have had a better weekend, but I'm still doing pretty good. I spent the weekend at Rocky Top watching my Gators lose to Tennessee and the worst college football tradition in the South. The now absurd singing of some random Morgan Wallen song that nobody in the stadium even knew at the end of the third quarter, replacing Friends in Low Places. And it is it's terrible. It's absolutely horrific. We do Tom Petty's Won't Back Down, but at least that has the words Won't Back Down, and there's a nice chorus to it. This sucked. It was the worst thing in the world. It's terrible. That's my takeaway from the game.
So the third quarter tradition, and like Bama's got Dixieland Delight,
which is awesome.
Auburn's got swag surfing. I guess I'm okay with that. It is okay to watch. I don't know of any others. Those are the ones I know. But
Tom Petty, Don't Back Down, though, we do. There's a couple Sweet Carolines, I believe. And, you know, there's just that, you know. But this is bad. Go back to Friends in Low Places. People know it. Give people what they want. Give them a nice song that everyone knows and that has a lot of very good parts that you can all yell and scream and get everyone going. That's the way to go. Whatever this mumble rap version of country music is, pass. And I like Morgan Wallen music. This just sucked.
But Morgan Wallen's got kind of a cult following these days.
Yeah. The song's called The Way I Talk, and it's about being Southern. It was fine as a musical song, just not for that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Trying too hard is what we're doing at Tennessee.
How was Knoxville?
The seats are too small. The stadium isn't big enough for the number of people they cram in there. The experience is not good. I had a great time at the game. The game was a lot of fun to watch, even though the Gators suck, and so does Tennessee, it appears. It went into overtime. Florida was in the red zone 5 times in the first half and got like 3 points. It's just ridiculous nonsense out of Napier. Congratulations on your buyout. Should have gone for 2 to win the game. Did not. Number 8 struggled to beat a wounded, undefeated Gator team. They're in trouble next week against Alabama.
Well, I thought they played a lot better than I would have expected them up there.
Look at their competition. I mean, both of those teams are not very good.
No, well, let's see what happens. Let's kick it off here. So I think we're going to join forces with you formally here on this newspaper stuff with the statutory obligation for legal advertising. I noticed your two like weekly state senator guest kind of said it's time to quit using the, like, hey, let's pretend people don't have access to internet and we had to print these newspaper legal notices. Here's a question for you. What do you think there's more of in the state of Alabama from top to bottom, access to the internet or a functioning, regularly circulating newspaper?
Functioning internet. I mean, no question about it. Everyone knows it. This whole thing, for those who aren't aware, is about public notices. They are required for many things, foreclosures, legal events, bids for the state government, and the printing of voter rolls. They've changed a little bit. But we're talking about millions of dollars a year going from taxpayer coffers into media outlets that do nothing but reprint public notices that nobody reads. It is a grift. It is a gift. It is graft. It is a scheme. And any legislator who allows this to continue is afraid of newspapers and probably over 70 years old.
Well, afraid of newspapers. What was the last hard-hitting, like, editorial in a print newspaper in the state against a lawmaker?
It's the one that got John Archibald a Pulitzer Prize, but he copied it from the Washington Post. He hit control V, add y'all, well, and that's
what was a still in print newspaper that puts out anything relevant? I mean, I gotta be careful here. Lanyap, they do good work, and Rob does a lot of stuff there, and they get legal advertising. But I mean, beyond that, in the rest of the state, name me a legitimate, like, hard-hitting newspaper that's still in print.
There isn't one. And, Jeff, I've got a slogan for our jihad, okay? Ready?
I'm waiting on you.
Turn the page. Turn the page.
Turn the page against paper tigers.
I don't know. But I know you. No, just turn the page. Whatever Tim Walz's wife is doing that at these rallies.
And
it's horrific. But in this case, turn the page.
That was bizarre.
Turn the page. Right. But this is a good slogan for this. Turn the page.
This was inevitable. We would have like a tangible example of the big time cost to the state.
It costs them millions of dollars on a project. I've heard it's up to about $6 million at this point from screw ups. Is that what you've heard?
It all started, it was a line in an LDOT release about the Gordo bypass over Pickens County. So Gordo is between, if you're driving from Tuscaloosa to Columbus, Mississippi, or Starkville, it's one of the last towns you go through till you get to Mississippi, and they've had that road four lane. They've been playing the four lane for years, and now they didn't follow the bid requirement, and now everybody knows everybody's bids, and they have to do it all again, and it is a mess the way that was done. And it was just a simple mistake by a newspaper. And probably, Dale, LDOT didn't exactly follow the law either. So it just shows this isn't the way to do these notices.
Yeah. Yeah. It's time to turn the page. I'm a little upset with you for not coming on with my other jihad that I've been trying to start here recently. And that would be the exposing and ending of public broadcasting, especially their public private partnerships with Todd Stacey's blog, the Alabama Daily News, where state government is paying for one of his reporters half their salary.
Well, I had a guest, Pete Ream, on last week. Really, I mean, Todd's a guest on my show every week,
like Todd.
He's been ever since I started. Even when I started doing radio in Huntsville, he was a regular. He's been he and you. Well, I guess you aren't really, but you and the two. He's like the one of the originals. Okay, that's left on the Jeff Poor show when I first began it, because everybody else has kind of come and gone. But you're right. I don't like a lot of like what they do or what he's doing there with that show. It was fine with Don Daly. It just feels like he's a little too married to power.
I'm not even worried about that. I'm worried about the idea that we're going to take government resources and use them to subsidize the salary of a employee of his. I mean, they put it on a journalism jobs website, and it said Alabama Daily News will pay part of your salary, and Alabama Public Television will pay the other part of your salary. That is not right. I mean, that is it's too cozy cozying up with power. That's part of it. It's also not an appropriate use of government resources. Well, what's next?
I don't know.
Are they going to pay for half of John Archibald's column to keep him from moving to Harvard?
What I don't know is, I don't know the details specifically about how much actual state money that the Capital Journal.
You saw the job, right? Do I need to send it to you?
No, I saw the job.
It says on the thing half.
No, but how much does Capital Journal actually get from the taxpayer as a APTV show?
Well, forget about that, because it's done on the public broadcasting. Well,
fair enough.
He's a state employee. Come on. This is
just a public-private partnership. And fair enough. I mean, you're fair. It's not like illegal or unethical, but it is unfair to like guys like us who work for Yellowhammer News and 1819 News respectively.
Yeah, cut me a check. I get the state government to cut me a check. I want half my salary paid. I cover state politics. You're down in Montgomery all the time.
Yep.
Cut me a check. Well, let's go. I'm dead serious about this. If we're going to do this, let's do this. But I think people would object if it was anything other than this. And look, public-private partnership, all that stuff, fantastic, wonderful, wonderful. They're building a studio for this show inside the new state house, correct?
Right. Well, they already have a studio at the state house.
I know. I understand that.
Well, let me add something to this. It's a little, I don't say outrageous, but a little unfair. And like I said, I like Todd. He's a guest on this program. He can be a little elitist sometimes, but they get a space. Alabama Daily News gets a space. It's like $25 a month. It's ridiculous how low their office they have there in the state house that they get to use. So we tried 1819 News, and I say we tried to see about, well, how can we get in on this deal? And they told us to go pound sand. So, I mean, it was like that. It was like, I mean, we went through all the right channels. We were like, we want this deal. They have the old Associated Press offices, Alabama Daily News, right next to where the studio is down. I don't know if you've ever been in the basement there, but it's really, I don't know, I guess it ought to be, there needs to be a fairer process, I would say. Yeah. It feels a little too insider.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put up $12.50 and we'll do a joint WVNN 1819 News studio office. We'll call it the Dale Jackson Memorial Office Space. I will never be down there using it, but you can use it. And
I'm
passing in. You know what? Screw it, Jeff. I'll pay the whole $25.
Well, you're very generous. The Todd Stacey thing is, I don't know if I, you know, like he does the state's public affairs show at the BCA Confab, and you know, and we,
I mean, at least you can like, about it, right?
You can take BCA or you can leave it. But what would we say, Dale, what would you and I say if they were doing it at the AEA event or the Appleseed event? I mean, they shouldn't be married like that at all.
Hey, when's the last time you were on that show?
Exactly. I mean, they never have us on.
I'm just checking. When was the last time you were on Todd Stacey's show? Because if you say Todd Stacey's on your show every single week, when was the last time you were on his show?
I haven't gotten the invitation yet.
Okay, I'm just wondering because, like, Tabitha Eisner's on there, and I guess she's the number two Democrat, but they have random activists on there. And I'm just thinking guys like you who have Todd Stacey on to promote that thing and talk about it. I would think that you would be someone.
The promotion aspect is great. I mean, I would love to be on that show to promote whatever it is I'm doing, but Todd, I let him promote his stuff on our show because I think he adds that insider perspective that nobody else really does. It's you can agree or disagree with it. He's the governor's news outlet, and that's where you find out what the governor's kind of thinking.
I agree with that, and I also think that since your listeners are paying for his show, they should hear their employee talk. And God knows they're not watching Alabama Public.
Yeah, I wonder how many of my listeners actually watch Capital Journal.
Outside of your state and show, how many of them would know who Todd Stacey is?
Probably not very many. I don't know. He's on Sean's show too. He's going to probably be on a little bit after this program.
About Todd Stacey, and a lot of people are saying, "Well, why are you being so mean about Todd Stacey?" It's not about Todd Stacey. It's about the premise behind the public-private partnership for a news gathering organization. It just seems kind of hinky that's what state resources are being used for. Since we're having the conversation about state resources,
well, I find the newspaper one to be far more compelling than this.
I understand, but I just figured this is not.
There's way more money at stake than this one.
Can I make your life more uncomfortable by bringing this up on your show?
Well, not really.
Okay, I'm trying though.
I mean, you may think you
I'm
are.
I'm coming after you, Todd Stacey. I'm coming after you. Is that better?
There you go. Well, I can't wait to hear his rebuttal. He doesn't. He barely knows this show exists. If he wasn't on it, it would be.
If you know Todd Stacey and you're a listener, you call him right now and you tell him that Jeff is talking bad about him.
Am I talking bad about Todd? You know, look, I've known Todd forever. But I don't know. I like his site. I like his newsletter. I like his paywall site. I have him on because I think he had something to show. That's all that matters to me. It's not some kind of transactional appearance.
Do you believe that the state should be paying his half his employee's salary?
I don't think the state is. They get money from other places besides the state, Dale.
Okay, so this is sort of the argument that to keep NPR going. Yeah. Just strip all the public funding from Alabama Public Television and let them live on their own.
I mean, how much do they get?
I don't care. Is it $1?
$1, what if they don't get any?
Are you saying it broadcasts on the Alabama Public Television Network?
How much money does the state legislature give to Alabama Public Television?
It's more than zero. I know that. It's a pretty significant amount of money because it gives money to all the NPR stations around the state, too.
I don't think it's that much. I don't know. But I did try to find this out.
Hold on. Don't worry about that. Just say, hey, we should end it and watch as they freak out.
Okay.
That's all you need to know. End the public subsidy of that show and public television. And see if they freak out. That's
find me a dollar amount and let me know if it's worth my time.
I don't know. That sounds like something.
See exactly.
Is it possible that I'm just being argumentative for argumentative's sake?
Possible, but you had a hard weekend. Speaking of hard weekends, Dale, folks want to find you online,
I don't even know what that transition means. But at the Dale Jackson on YouTube, on Facebook. On Twitter, I am everywhere you want to be. Come fight with me. Tell me your secrets, and I will expose them.
Well, what I meant was, since you had a hard time, people can give you more hard time.
Yeah, I figured it. I figured as much. FeeFinder.net/TheDaleJackson.
Y'all check that out for sure. Got to get out of here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. You just text and I'll respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. I named Texter. I was married to a woman from Philadelphia. I'm sorry to say I spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania. The mafia is still heavily involved in the voting process. Yeah, I mean, maybe they are, but I don't know. I mean, Is the mafia invested in this election? Like, if Trump's president, if Harris is president, I got to tell you, I think people are coming around to this conclusion. No matter who wins on November 5th, on November 6th, or be it January 21st, 2025, you're still going to lace up your shoes. You're still going to go to work. You're still going to take your kids to school. I mean, so much of what you do relies upon you personally. And you control your own destiny. This is, in the United States, we control our own destiny. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. Marginally, it can. Most people's jobs. Some people have jobs in government or whatever. I understand. If you work at the shipyard or the port or whatever, things can change based on who's president. But as a whole, Americans it doesn't really matter as much. That's just the truth. Life goes on. And regardless of who's president, you don't have to like the person, but that's what I think people are starting to realize, that they're starting to say, well, yeah, maybe there's some truth to that. maybe I shouldn't get so emotionally invested in politics. Now, you listen to this show, you're emotionally invested in politics, or maybe it's just of interest to you, and you're watching cable news, which is a smaller and smaller portion of the public. But I think a lot of people are just like, the hell with this. I don't really, this while you know, maybe it is important in some regard, but to me personally, it's just, it's not going to impact my life quite as much. Even though I'm told it will, the truth being told is just like, it doesn't. You're still going to go to school or work or whatever it is you do. Maybe you just listen to this show for fun. You're retired. You go out on a fishing boat every day. Well, whatever it is, but you have certain beliefs in the country. You love your country, and you don't want to see it fall into wrong hands. And that's important. But to a lot of people, it's not. And to the public, they don't even think about this stuff. And they've been told for the last 20 years that every Republican is Hitler. At some point, when a Republican is elected and we don't turn it to the Third Reich, it just sort of just becomes white noise. There's a desensitization going on. And I think Democrats, I think the left have depleted that bank account. I think they've tapped out. It used to be we treated politics like it was Auburn and Alabama in the Iron Bowl every single election cycle. And now people are like, no, it's not even that high stakes in my mind. And I'm not saying I agree with that sentiment, but I think that's where the public is headed. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hill raisers. People, get out of our way wherever we go.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. And FM Talk 106.5, hour number 3 begins right now. 251-343-0106. Text line, keep them coming. I got 4 or 5 there, I see. Scott Stadagan, the House Majority Leader, will be our guest at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned for that. A couple of things to get over, talk about here, and I sense I don't say a panic. Maybe it's a frustration. Maybe it's the Democrats. This is a really weird one to me. Having to court black male voters. Have you seen this? Have you seen the news stories? Have you seen that black male voters are trending for Trump? I just don't believe that Trump is ever going to win a majority of those voters. But Democrats have always relied on these voters, and they're losing them. If you don't have the black vote nailed down in a presidential election on October the 14th before a November 5th election, you're going to lose. That's a telling sign right there, guys. And it's not, you know, it's not like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Glenn Beck or whoever. Clay and Buck, whatever, you know, right-wing sources, Breitbart, are saying that this is left. Sunday shows yesterday talking about the black male vote and the Harris-Walz team struggle with that. And it would be like this. It would be like saying, well, you know, Republicans are struggling with Christians. More and more Christian evangelical voters are looking at the Democrat ticket. This is what you're going to lose. It would be pointless. There's just certain constituencies within a party's electorate that you've got to have nailed down. I'm telling you guys, you can see it in their eyes. You can hear it in their voices. You can sense it in their rhetoric. It feels like there's some problems on the Harris side. She is not a good candidate. This will be the what the history books say about this presidential run for her. Why didn't you do more interviews? Why did your answers always come off in this like mumbo jumbo word salad? Why couldn't you have been more prepared? Why did we go with Joe Biden in 2023 in the first place? Well, all of these what ifs, this is what, how do you get beat by a guy who was impeached twice, 34 count felony conviction, shot at twice, leaves office with record low, leaves office with record low approval ratings, but it was still tied with George W. Bush. He was persona non grata for like years in Washington, D.C. circles. Until Trump, and then when Trump comes along, he's like this, you know, the man, it should be better to go back to those days. They got some problems. I think the old guard are saying, hey, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And what the sycophants, what the campaign, what the apparatchiks or whatever are saying is like, oh, nothing to worry about there. Don't worry about that. Nothing to see here. And this is what they did with Hillary Clinton. They told everybody that they were going to blow it out. Trump was a joke. The Huffington Post wouldn't even acknowledge Donald Trump on its website as a serious candidate until the very end. This was 16. They refused to say that this is a serious candidate. I think people are still in that mindset on the left. Now, Trump will win, and then they'll sneer at, you know, the great unwashed for not making a more educated choice. And the elites will be mad. Oh. Breaking news. I'm talking about signs of desperation here. Are y'all ready? This is, they're changing their tactics. This is a clear sign of Kamala Harris desperation, if there ever was one. This just in. Vice President Kamala Harris is sitting down with Fox News anchor Brent Baer on Wednesday for her first interview on the Fox News channel. Quote, Fox News Channel's chief political anchor Brett Baer will conduct an interview with Democratic presidential candidate Vice President Kamala Harris in the battleground state of Pennsylvania on Wednesday, October the 16th. This week's appearance marks her first formal sit-down interview with the network ever and will air during special report with Brett Baer, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on October 26th. Brett Baer will be anchoring a special report from Pennsylvania that evening. Desperation. That is the desperation right there. That's it. They know they're in trouble. You're going on Fox News. Is there any reason to think she's going to do well in that situation? What are her people thinking? I'm telling you, they are running out of ideas. They're running out of alternatives. They just didn't have a good campaign. It didn't have a good foundation. They didn't have the best people. They didn't have the right team, the right chemistry. Now it's a series of gimmicks. And this is a gimmick. These are gimmick media plays trying to get something, some kind of bump, some kind of spark. If Donald Trump announces tomorrow he's going to go on, I don't know, what's a very bland MSNBC show? Andrea Mitchell Reports or something like that. You're like, what are you doing, man? I'm telling you that they are throwing anything they can at the wall to see what will stick. The Democrats, they got some problems here. This is not just right-wing talk radio boy talking.
Dave from Gulf Shores. Fan art. That's an old, old picture of me, Dave. I have three Chihuahua listeners. Well, I appreciate that. Sorry, hopefully my voice doesn't scare them too much. Tim, Jeff, I know the unions have always backed Democrats, but the more of these immigrants that are let in, undercutting wages, Democrats are not helping. What are your thoughts? I think a lot of union voters believe that. Let me explain this to you. Look, some of these union jobs are very high-skilled. They're blue-collar jobs, but they're high-skilled. You got to know certain skills and have a certain skill set to get them. But at the very bottom of the food chain, right? The very bottom of the food chain, the wages are being depressed. People aren't willing to get off their couch and go to work for the wages a lot of these places are paying. You know, they're just not. They're better off. It is a rational decision to stay home and collect a check from the government versus go out and get a job. Well, you could make more money if you go work, but the problem is such. I mean, how much more money? There's got to be a premium to get you off your couch. If you could make $100 a day just camping out on your couch all day and not working, versus $105 a day by going to work every day and paying for gas. I mean, which decision are you going to make? It has to be a appreciable difference in your quality of life for you to go to work. But since that's the case, you got a number of people in the workforce, able-bodied people, can go to work. It's just not worth my while. So, you know, well, the natural way the economic supply-demand curve should work is, well, we'll just have to pay more to get people off the couch. But they can't compete against the federal government. They can't compete against the state government or whoever they're collecting their benefits from. So, like, well, we don't want to really do that. What if we brought in people who aren't eligible for federal assistance from other countries to take these jobs? And the wages stay low. There's no wage growth there. You're not paying the people working to do whatever it is that you want them to do the true value of their job. You're just importing labor, cheap labor. And that is a trickle-up effect. Well, if the base level job doesn't pay as much, do you think the job up from that is going to pay as much, or the job up from that? I mean, you got to think of the labor pool as a whole, and I think that matters. I have a What's Happening page screenshot. Something about that. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that during a break. A name texture. I usually agree with most of your comments, but you're way off on it's not that big of who takes over as president. I've seen the big picture. There's so many reasons we can't have Libs rule for 4 years. But I've been hearing that all my life. When Obama came, it was we were going to be all Soviet or Bolsheviks or whatever. I don't know. Like, we were going to be communist country from here on out. And it never happened. It matters. It doesn't matter as much as people say it does. I'm sorry. You could disagree with me if you want. You got to go to work. Unless you work in government, some jobs it does matter. But what we were told when Joe Biden was elected president was when he was elected president, we were going to get Puerto Rico and D.C. statehood. They were going to end the filibuster. They were going to pass all this legislation and going to pack the Supreme Court. None of that happened. I'm telling you guys, there's a hysteria that is created out of this to get you to vote. And you could take my word for it, or you could say I'm an idiot, but it doesn't matter. I mean, on the day after the election day or the day after inauguration day, your life's probably pretty much going to be the same. You control your own destiny in this country. Any other country, this might matter more. In America, what matters is up to you. All commentators don't agree. The black vote is only 13% of the population. If white vote goes to Kamala, the Republicans could easily lose. But the white male vote isn't
I mean, there's no signs of that. Black male voters, and it's not commentators, it is actual, like, campaigning and efforts and Obama going out to talk to the brothers. You know, like, that stuff is a sign that their internal polls say they got a problem there. They have a problem. They need to work on this problem. I think her campaign is leaking oil. Community notes want to be. If you complain, is it doing enough media? You complain that she is. I'm not complaining she's doing media. I'm telling you, community notes want to be, and you can clean the earwax out of your ears. I'm glad she's doing it. I'm not complaining. Let's make that clear. But this is desperation. Going on Fox News 3 weeks out of a presidential election is desperation. They're in trouble. She's going into semi-hostile territory. She's not equipped for this interview. She is a bad candidate. I'm not complaining about that. I hope she goes on Brett Baer, and then right after that does Laura Ingraham, and then John Hay. I hope she goes on all those shows. No complaints from me whatsoever. So don't perceive that as a complaint. Perceive it as an observation that she's in trouble because she's having to take these desperate measures. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty brown.
Look away. Look away. Look away. Dixieland.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Monday morning. Coming up on tomorrow's program, programming note, John Wall, I'm a Republican Party chairman, and two guests I really don't know to be named later. Let's see what we got here. Let's get through these texts. We get to our next guest, House Majority Leader Scott Stenhagen. Squirrel. Let's see. It does matter. We are in a state and paying the price because people have been complacent and not emotionally invested. Yes, we will still go do these mundane things, especially the privileged and performative leftists with higher prices and bolded crooks everywhere in a corrupted society that most people fail to notice. That won't last as long, though. Well, my point is, yeah, I think inflation certainly sucks. How many people are like, oh, wow, I'm really mad at her. I don't think as many people are mad at the powers that be. There is and it's probably a really uneducated viewpoint. It's just people price gouging. Anyway, scroll continues. Every time liberals put down low-class Walmart shoppers or backwoods them hicks or whatever, they conveniently forget or ignore the insult that minorities make up a huge percentage of that. It's the elitism. It's a little patronizing, right, from the elites to talk about racial minorities in such a way that is, well, you need us to make your life better. Well, some believe that. The news that Harris is sitting down with Brett Baer is starting to take hold on the different cable channels. This is desperation, guys. And they text her, the left seems scared because they know exactly what Kamala is and what she is not. This is not the left just being afraid of your poll numbers. They know she can't do this job. But maybe I think it's this. They thought she could. They thought she was their best shot at winning the presidency. They ditched Biden. Biden would probably, I mean, she's going to outperform Biden. Where they made their mistake, it's not, they can't, the institutions that dominate Democratic Party politics in America are unwilling to leave it up to the voters to decide who the nominee is. Because if they do, they're going to wind up with a crackpot radical leftist like a Bernie Sanders. And you can't have Bernie Sanders as the face of the party of Wall Street, of Hollywood, or of any of these well-financed, well-funded institutions in our country. Because he'll socialize them all, or he'll try. He'll turn them all to the Postal Service.
And that's why they're the elites on the you know, the hedge fund manager or the Goldman Sachs employee, they vote Democrat because they won't. They know that they have institutions that can manipulate government to their benefit. Republicans don't go along with their crap. But the problem where they have a problem is the people who run the Democratic Party or who are voting on who runs the Democratic Party don't see eye to eye with them. That's not built for this world. That's not going to last very long. That is how Kamala Harris got the nod. Agree or disagree, I don't really care. Tuskers, what happened to self-worth? I have two jobs, still paying bills, barely. I hear you, Tuskers. I have like five. It's not a fun world. To this day and age, like if you wanted to have like the American dream, you pretty much got to have a side hustle now. Or you have to have two-income family. It's just not the way it used to be anymore. The 9-to-5 lifestyle. I don't even know what I've never had that. Now, part of that's the profession I have chosen, the way of life. I what I do for a living. There's no downtime. Tim, Jeff, do you think Fox News will be easy on Kamala? What's the over under on, I grew up in a middle working class, class family. Don't think she's going to answer that many questions. Damn Yankee, we might not be a socialist society yet, but Obama is still in the shadows and clearly influencing decisions made at the executive level. Not before in our history has that occurred. You know, Trump has campaigned in Virginia, New Jersey, Colorado, New York, Nevada, New Mexico, Southern California here in our waning days election. What does that tell you? What do they need to know that the rest of us don't know? They're blowing money in a lot of these states. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.